it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again,
It's gone, it's into the bullpen, this game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field, it's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires, swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
All right, let's hit it. Play Tessie, episode 264. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on WEEI's YouTube channel. Subscribe to WEEI there. You can find the Play Tessie episodes in the Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up button on all those videos. We really appreciate it. And then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Here with Sammy, here with Pat. And yeah. The Sox lose 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, and they won the finale. So, I mean, I've opened the last two podcasts saying the same thing. I hate when they lose 2 and win the last one, or win 2 and lose the last one. There's now 3 in a row where they've done it. But in this series, like, there's no agendas here. We're just going off rip. Like, the vibes are good. They won the last game of the series. Garrett Crochet was phenomenal. The offense scored 6 runs in the first inning, and even though they didn't score again, like, that 6-run inning was a big pick-me-up when they needed it. But the reality here is they lost 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, and they're a game and a half behind them. If they'd won 2 out of 3, they'd have been a half game ahead of them. Now they're a game and a half behind them. The Yankees' remaining schedule is 7 with the Orioles, 3 with the White Sox, and 3 with the Twins. Those are their opponents. Like, they're a game and a half behind. To me, I'm not saying like it's definitely over for the top wildcard spot. The division's out. The top wild card spot, to me, does not feel like it's within reach, even though it's only a game and a half. Maybe that's extreme, but that's why I declared these second two games of the series must wins. Because to me, if you come out of this series a game and a half out of the Yankees, or if they'd lost this game tonight, it would have been 3.5 out. But let's talk about where they're at. They're a game and a half out. I don't feel good about their chances of getting a home wildcard series. And now the question is, are they going to be going to New York? Are they going to go to Seattle? Are they going to go to Houston? Or are they not going to make the playoffs at all? Because after they lost the second game of the series, that was the conversation. And justifiably so, because the Rangers at the time were 2 behind them, effectively a game and a half because they've got the tiebreaker. The Rangers lost today. The Red Sox won. We can breathe a little bit. But I still do not feel good about this team's chances of getting a home wildcard series. And to me, that was so important because that was how you paved the road to getting Roman Anthony back with this team. Now your best case scenario feels like you have to go on the road and win a wildcard series without him.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. I know we fundamentally disagree on the term must win game. I have to be, for me to get there, you've got to be
back against the wall, you have a 5% chance to survive this season if you don't win today. For me to call it a must-win game. I get where you were coming from in that it's a must-win game if you want to get home field for the wild card. I get that. I'm not quite there yet either. A game and a half behind the Yankees, that's not insurmountable. But I think what makes this group a good podcast group is that we all look at the season completely differently. Like, you're naming who the Yankees have coming up, who the Red Sox have coming up. All I'm thinking is Tuesday, they play the A's. Who's pitching? It's Connelly early. How's he going to do? I am so like one at a time. And I feel like this time of year is where that's a good way to be. Beginning of the year, less so, because the games are, you know, they're less significant. They all count the same technically, but we know they're not all the same. This September baseball is wildly different. So right now, sights set on the A's. This is a series the Red Sox absolutely have to win 2 out of 3. I won't say sweep. I think it's unfair to say you need to sweep Major League Baseball. These teams are good, especially the A's have a great offense. So 2 out of 3. You got Connelly early seeing them again. You've got a bullpen, Tolley, Harrison, something game in game 2. We'll find out. And then it should be Giolito in game 3. So,
Sammy, let me push you a little bit here. You say they have to win 2 out of 3 in order to what?
It's just, you don't technically have to, but come on. If you really want to make the playoffs and set yourself up, like, it's a bad look. It's a bad look, bad vibe. You don't literally have to. But you got to take 2 out of 3. You can't let the A's beat you at home in September. It's just a bad aura, bad omen. I know it sounds like I'm talking out two sides of my mouth when I say that, but it's like, it's more broad, big picture with that one. You can't lose a series where you're in a fight for a playoff spot, and then it's just a layup. At that point, you're like, all right, maybe we'll get the third wild card, but you got to take 2 out of 3 here. I love what Lou said on Twitter, that if anyone's saying you have to sweep, don't listen to him. I think that's great advice. A have to sweep crowd is like, I get it. I want them to sweep too, but this is a major league team playing another major league team. So I'm hoping 2 out of 3. Got to win this series. Got to win all the rest of the series, honestly, if you want to get that top wild card spot. And you got to win close to all the series if you want to get into the playoffs with how tight things are getting. So that's what I'm thinking about. Tuesday. That's what's on the mind.
I want to get Pat's take here, but before we do, if the Red Sox win all 4 of their series 2 out of 3, that would mean they're 8-4 the rest of the way. Which means, I don't know how many games the Yankees have left, but to me, they're going to do better than that. That's why I think the top wild card is out. Because you could win all four of the rest of your series, and I still don't think they're going to get it.
Yankees could lose 5 out of 7, and it wouldn't shock me. They're so weird. They're so volatile. Were either of you at all impressed by the Yankees this series? I thought there was nothing impressing. First game, they beat the Red Sox.
I was impressed with their pitching. I was.
Yeah.
It was all right. Fried wasn't that impressive.
Luis Hill, no hit him through 6.
That was the only thing. I was thinking Hill was really good, and that's pretty much
bullpen,
it.
Bullpen looked good.
I have a hot take.
Bullpen's been up and down all year. Yeah.
You play to win every game. I want to preface this. I think in terms of making noise in the postseason, I actually think the best outcome for them is the third wild card.
Hmm. And you're saying that with the thought that who is going to win the AL West, because that's the team you'd
The Mariners or the Astros.
So you'd rather go to Seattle or Houston than New York or Toronto?
Yes. Ideally Seattle. And that sounds crazy just with their pitching, but ideally Seattle because of the ballpark. Because of that offense is not nearly as good as it should be. Both are better than New York right now. They just are without Roman, especially that short porch in New York. Yankees have 6 guys over 20 bombs. Like, anyone can get you at any point, at least in Seattle. Houston, you know, left-handed batters, there's always that chance in the Crawford box, but it's to the point where I think we just at this right now without Roman, I think we match up better with one of Houston or Seattle than we do in New York against New York.
The thing that scares me, Seattle is 48-27 at home. They dominate at home.
I'm also trying to find the pitcher splits. I've got Logan Gilbert, so I'm trying to find Wu's next. Logan Gilbert at home has a 2.13 ERA and on the road has a 5.29. And this is exactly the way it was last year. Like when we were talking about potentially trading for a Mariners pitcher, We looked at those home road splits and it's like, oh, do you really trust it? Brian Wu is a little bit less volatile, but it's still, I mean, it's over a run difference. It's 3.58 on the road, 2.44 at home. I see what you're saying, Pat, because you're saying they're like they're going to have to win off the back of Crochet and like win a close game as opposed to win an offensive onslaught. To me, I feel like Seattle actually is the last place I want to see them go, just because I don't think they'd hit them.
Fair, yeah, fair.
It's also it's just the complete reverse logic of what Pat said, and I'm not saying this is what I believe, but this is just the reverse logic. If you're in Yankee Stadium and it's a three-game series, it's a small ballpark, that makes the series more volatile. And when you're down Roman Anthony and you feel like you're not at your most, you know, you're at your best, that might be a better scenario for the Red Sox, just having that in their back pocket. Like maybe Connor Wong runs into a 320-foot fly ball right field and, oh my God, it's out. Holy crap. In Seattle, it's a fly ball. In Fenway, it's a fly ball. You're out. You're out. Yankee Stadium, it's a home run. So you just have that volatility where shit can just get crazy. And like I said, if you're down and you're like, oh shit, we don't have Roman, we don't have Abreu, our pitching staff is poopy now. Like they're not bad, but they're just injured. Maybe you want that crazy atmosphere, because who knows?
Let me ask you guys a question. Okay, we'll talk New York, Seattle, Houston. Yeah, that's it. We'll talk those three. Would you go in? We're recording a Red Sox. We're recording the Playtesting podcast, the last one before that series starts. And I tell you guys to predict the outcome of the series. Roman Anthony is not back. Three-game series in any of those three ballparks. Would you pick the Red Sox? Not saying can they win. I'm saying would you pick them to win a series on the road in any of those ballparks? No Roman Anthony.
Probably not. The only one that I'm close with is Yankees. Just because they've had the Yankees number all year, and the Yankees just do not impress me at all. They're so sloppy, and the bullpen is up and down.
Pat, what about you?
I don't think I would. Weirdly enough, the one I think I would be a little bit closer on saying yes to is Houston. They played Houston really well all year long. That series in Houston, the most recent one, wasn't all that great. But aside, like, they just match up well with Houston in my eyes, but I wouldn't pick them outright to advance, no.
And that right there, because I agree with you guys, I don't think right now with this iteration of the team, and obviously things can change. Injuries happen for other teams. Trends, you know, they get Willier back if Willier lights the world on fire, or maybe someone gets super hot. Like, obviously that could change. But right now, as it stands, I agree with you guys. I wouldn't pick them in those series. And that right there is why I was talking must win two games on Saturday and Sunday. Because if you put the Red Sox at home, even without Roman, I think I'd pick them against all three. They're under 500 on the road this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that matters as much in the playoffs. I feel like it's a whole different sport. I hear what you're saying. I definitely feel better about them at home. It's so hard to pick them against any of those teams without Roman, especially if Crochet, Bayo, Giolito aren't lined up perfectly, 1-2-3, then you're even in a shittier spot. That's why this whole time I've been like, just make the playoffs. I won't complain. Let's roll the dice when we get there, but just make the playoffs. Don't bungle it.
Yeah, and yeah, I should clarify that. Even though I said it's a must-win two games, I'm not going to be disappointed in the season if they make the playoffs, but they don't get the top wild card spot and then they get bounced. Like, the goal here was to make the playoffs. But in terms of setting this team up to potentially win the World Series, which that's what we play for here, right? We want to see this team win the World Series. In terms of that, yeah, it's must win. The same way it would be if you're down 3-0 in the ALCS, it's a must win game. But if they lose that game and get bounced in the ALCS, it doesn't mean it's a failed season. Like, if they make the playoffs, and that'll be the discussion we have next, I feel like, because, I mean, we were the fan base was freaking out after Saturday in terms of potentially not making the playoffs. But yeah, if they make the playoffs, regardless of what happens, it is a successful season.
I never freak out. I was freaking out on Saturday night when they lost. I was like, oh my God, they're actually going to blow this. They're actually going to blow this. Holy shit. Like, but then I calmed down and I was like, all right, Crochet tomorrow. That's your way out. And he did his thing. So What am I freaking out about? Now the A's are coming to town. Hopefully that's a nice cushion. And all of a sudden I'm feeling like they could win three in a row. Look at that.
I have a question. Pat, you want to go first before I ask you the question?
I said a really quick one. Who does Texas play coming up?
Houston.
It's Houston, right?
Wonderful.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Oh, so if you take two out of three against the A's, you feel
pretty
good.
Keep winning
games. Yeah. The big thing is Houston, Seattle, and Texas all have series against each other this next like 2 week stretch.
Your destiny, lucky for the Red Sox, their destiny really is in their own hands because of that. Because like before, you had the Rangers and the Mariners winning every game, and the Red Sox, like, don't get it twisted. What they're doing is not what the Mets are doing right now. Like the Mets full on collapse, and it's of their own doing. The Red Sox have definitely fallen out of favor a bit, but it's like a week and a half of not even awful, but just subpar baseball while these other teams win every goddamn day. And so they gain a ton of ground, but it's not like they've been awful. But I want to backtrack a little bit because back to the freak out after Saturday's loss, effectively a game and a half up on Texas. Everyone's talking about, oh my God, could they collapse, miss the playoffs, whatever. How much of it do you guys think had to do with Alex Cora's quote? And I'll read it for people who haven't heard it, but like he dropped this quote to the media while we were on radio on Saturday. And he said, quote, "I think we should stop talking October, to be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff going on and we have to play better. I'm not saying we're in a bad spot, but I think we have to wait, you know, to see if October is part of this."
I thought that was a good quote. I actually liked it. It was kind of a let's focus on task at hand kind of quote, but I understand if it rubbed people the wrong way and made them freak out. So for me, no, it didn't make me freak out anymore. Nate Eaton made me freak out. But I bet, yeah. Oh, buddy, we'll get there. But in general, I think that did add a little bit of fuel to the fire.
To me, it didn't tell me anything I didn't know, because like obviously we're very aware of where they are in the standings and the trends of these teams that are chasing them and right behind them. But with Alex Cora, it's like always, even when he isn't necessarily believing it himself, he always, you know, exudes confidence in his guys. Everything's going to be fine. Like when they lost three in a row after Roman, like he was like, no, like, come on, it's three games. Even though we're all like, okay, but they look really bad after Roman went down. They don't really look like they can hit. And he's like, guys, it's three games. And it's like, even if he doesn't necessarily believe it, he's saying it. And now it's like, we have to wait to see if October is going to be a part of this. Like, yeah, like that. It's like, okay, you know, the manager has some doubt here. And I get it. The point of it was what you said, Sammy. Like, we cannot look ahead to October. We have to focus on the task at hand. But to me, it's like it comes off a certain way, especially written. If you listen to it, it doesn't come off as much that way. But written, it sure as shit does.
Yes, that's a good point. It sounds worse when you read it off. And yeah. It's just kind of like the words right in front of you. But his Cora, you have to hear him say these things because he has different vibes. He changes vibes a lot. He could say the same thing two different ways and it can mean two different things. So, yeah. But that is a quote that will scare people. It has to.
I would rather a quote like that, just proving, you know, you're aware of the situation, you're self-aware, than anything Aaron Boone says in any form of a struggle.
True.
Like, it's right in front of us. We're fine. It's early in the season. We'll figure it out. We're savages in the box. Like, I would much rather Cora just outright be, yeah, like, this isn't a lock. Like, we have to figure this shit out. I would so
Tom
much
Farrell
rather.
Did that shit.
He really did.
Yes. Yeah.
Wayne Miley, Clay Buckles, like,
yep. Threw the ball with crispness. Yeah.
great Christmas.
Like the quote's like, it's just a self-aware quote. It's just being like, look, yeah, we're in a playoff spot. I like our chances, but we have to figure it out if we're even going to make it. So it's just brutal honesty. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I can't disagree with that. It's just, it's like a clear different tone. And when he changes the tone, it's like, okay, why is he changing the tone? It's because he knows they need to lock in and change the way things are going. And it's like, okay, if he sees it that way, then maybe we need to look inward here and maybe pump the brakes, because like I've been guilty of this. Like, you look at the playoff odds, you look at the way they've played for the better part of the season here. It felt for a while like the playoffs were not necessarily a certainty, but like they were going to happen. And I still feel like the playoffs are going to happen, even though I don't think they're going to get that number one wild card spot. But I still do think the playoffs are going to happen. But it is the first two games were a reality check here that it isn't a certainty. And these games are super, super important, like 12 games left. And you got to go one at a time here and win as many of them as you can. Because if you win 7 or 8 out of 12 here, yeah, you're probably going to the playoffs. Even 6-6, if these teams play in each other, like I'm trying to think, I'd have to do the math, but that's why the playoff odds are still so favorable to them. Like they control their own destiny. And if they do even just fine, like they're going to get in. Pat? Mm-hmm.
As of right now, so this is after counting the Rangers loss today, before counting the Red Sox win today, they still had a 90.3% chance of making the playoffs. So
that's
it's
crazy.
It feels abysmal. Like it feels like this, not necessarily to the point of like kind of walking the tightrope, but it feels like it's going to be, you know, something to really, really watch. But I mean, you figure with the win today, they probably bounce up to 92 point something, low 93% ish. So the odds are in their favor.
What percentage did you just say? You said 90?
90.3.
I've got it at that percentage, but I've got it updated as of like 30 minutes ago. So it might just be that.
Oh, really?
It says updated Sunday the 14th at 11:21 p.m. I've got...
But the Sox record's wrong.
Oh, you're right. Because, yeah, today secured an over 500 record.
Regardless, they're above 90%. That's a good spot to be.
Yes.
That feels high. Not to be a downer, but that feels high.
It does a little bit. It does.
Yeah.
I hate that I'm saying this. You can't account for vibes and momentum and shit like that. And I know that these FanGraphs calculations are the closest we can get. But point remains, like you can't account
trust
for
your
everything.
Gut a little bit too.
Right. Like last night, I was at the Fenway bars Saturday night. The vibe was not good. That did not feel like a fan base whose team, just lost, but they're 90% going to make the playoffs. Like there were a lot of open tables at the bullpen, not a lot of people out in the street. Saturday night at like 8:30 too. It wasn't even late. So, I think I'd pump the brakes on the 90%. I'm still at like, I'll go up. Last time I said 75, I think I'll go up to 80 just because the amount of games is slowly ticking down and they didn't get swept by the Yankees. You got the A's coming up next. So I'll say 80. I'm at 80% playoffs.
I got to hunker down and figure out how many of these last 12 games I think the Red Sox actually have to win just to get in. Like
literally have to win?
Like, what is the least amount of games they can win and they're going to get in? Like, not like, if the other teams do badly. No, like, if you win this amount of games, they have 12 left. I just said 6-6, but that's off the dome. Like, I got to.
I would say 7. I think 7.
I was
going to
say 7-5. Like, just go over 500 and then you're good.
Yeah. They're definitely. Yeah. I feel like they're definitely.
Oh, God.
If they win seven games, that'd be 89 wins.
But So
that's
the other
a good
thing,
season.
Though, is...
That is a playoff season.
That's 7-5, pending the outcome of Rangers-Astros, Rangers-Mariners, Mariners-Astros. Like, that's... There's
but
still...
That point, but that's why I feel pretty good about getting closer to 500, is because those teams are going to lose games. They have to.
Yeah, I'd say 7-5. If we're talking literally must win, not like, you gotta win if you want this... Like, literally must win to get in, I think you gotta win 7 more. That's a good spot. Maybe
7
6.
More. Like, there's nothing really that's going to happen to, like, because if the Rangers win a bunch of games, then that means the Astros are going to lose a bunch of games, and then you're going to get in. You know,
and the good thing with 7-5 is 7 out of 12 seems kind of daunting, especially with the ending Tigers Blue Jays. But if you take 2 out of 3, if you win both series against the A's and the Rays, you basically can't get swept one of the last two series.
If you take 2 out of 3 in both, you're saying, then you're at 4 of the 7. Well, that means you have to win.
Oh, true.
One,
yeah,
lose.
4. Yes, you're right. Yeah, I'm an idiot.
But also, okay, another thing. Being a baseball fan, a fan of any singular team this time of year is so weird because we're constantly changing the emphasis we have on the scoreboard watching. Like, for me, for for a while now, it's been Yankees and Blue Jays, Yankees and Blue Jays, root against the Yankees and Blue Jays. Those are the two teams, Yankees and Blue Jays. Now, like the primary team that I watched, like I had three screens on during football Sunday. I had the Pats on one, I had Red Zone on another. And the third one was the Ranger game, root against the Rangers, root against the Rangers. I'm now going to be rooting for the Blue Jays. The Red Sox are not winning the division. So if the Blue Jays can lock up the division and maybe not necessarily lock it up, but create some distance between them and the Yankees, maybe they start thinking about, okay, because if there's distance between them and the Yankees, then there's going to be distance between them and whoever's winning the AL West. So they'll basically have a bye locked up once they have the AL East locked up. If there's some space there, maybe they pump the brakes a little bit in their Red Sox series. Don't push their starters to 100 pitches. Maybe they don't throw their relievers. Way.
I think they try to crush the Red Sox no matter what. I think that's kind of like a we'll see you soon kind of series.
It could
I don't
be.
Think they'll do that.
It could be, but if they fuck them up. If they create distance, maybe there's some element of like we got like our primary focus here is get to the postseason, get there healthy, get there well rested.
Yeah, maybe they don't use their leverage guys on back-to-back nights, shit like that. Maybe like yeah. slightly less aggressive, but I still think they're going to be using their big
Probably.
Boys and they want to win those games.
They're not going to be like skipping starts and benching.
No, no, but they could very easily keep Berrios, Gosman, Bassett, Bieber to sub 80.
You know where
like,
you might
get the mentality. If the Red Sox are like, think about it. Like the hardest time to beat a team is when they are down 3-0 because it's easy for you to relax. You're up 3-0 and they're fighting for their goddamn lives. And maybe the Red Sox won't have a down 3-0 mentality, but they're definitely fighting for their lives. And if the Blue Jays, you know, feel like it's kind of a cakewalk, maybe mentally it's a different ballgame.
You know where you might catch a break? You might catch a break in that Detroit series to end the season. Because if yeah. Skubal's lined up for one of those games, the Tigers might be like, ah.
He'll definitely be a lower pitch count. Even if
yeah,
he's lined up
least.
To start. But yeah, lower pitch count for sure.
Just because that is literally the last series of the season and it brushes right up against the playoffs. So they might, that's the only scenario I can think of where you might get lucky, him or Flaherty. They maybe either skip him or don't push him like you said. But the Blue Jays division, decent chance you see them. I think they're going to be like, sorry about it. We're Canadian, but we're not being nice today.
Sammy,
freaking Boston.
We shortened our fantasy baseball league season a week to get rid of the last week of the season because there were so many examples of exactly what the Tigers will do here. I'd have to see how it lines up, but if I'm them, I do want Skubal pitching one of those games against the Red Sox because it lines him up on somewhat regular rest to pitch game one of the division series, but he's not going 100 pitches or close to it. So many times, like we shortened it up because these pitchers would get pulled at like 65, 70 pitches. And maybe they throw a bullpen in a controlled environment to finish it or something, but these teams that have clinched don't treat it the same. Joe?
You do have to remember that in the last start, Skubal got pulled for the...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The side pain or whatever,
yeah,
and they say it's okay, but they
yeah,
are
we'll
definitely
see.
Going to they're going to nurse him to the finish line. He's probably not going to exceed 100 pitches in a start the rest of this year, but they're going to be the Tigers have a playoff spot locked, and they probably have a bye locked up
yeah.
as well. They're not going to push Skubal anywhere. Like he probably won't go more than 5 innings. He won't pitch more than 100 pitches the rest of the season.
Yeah,
I tend to agree with that.
That's a good point.
I tend to agree
good
with
point.
That.
The rib or the hip or whatever it was with Skubal. Yeah,
yeah
I mean, if they lose Skubal, they're nothing without him. It's like the Red Sox losing Crochet. They're completely screwed. So
you saw it. Tonight.
Yeah, they gotta be careful. Yeah, you guys should Tigers call up your like fifth starter from AAA to face the Red Sox. Come on, just be cool.
Come on, yeah, same with you, Jays.
Then he'd go 6 innings and we'd be furious. 6 innings, 1 run. We'd be like, are you kidding me, Johnny DeLuca, the pitcher?
I was looking at the A's pitchers that they're facing upcoming. You got Jeffrey Springs. Then they got that Barnett guy again that they wanted so badly to tap for 10 runs and they couldn't score anything. And then Ginn?
Is that JT Ginn?
Yeah. He's meh. I think Springs is a good pitcher, but he's slowing down big time down the stretch, and they hammered him in Oakland.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Sacramento. So I think they'll destroy him. Mason Barnett was the Red Sox had they were like shooting at him, but the bullets all surrounded his silhouette and they never hit him. That's basically what it was like in a movie when that happens.
Wait, what movie is that? It's
Ali G is what I was thinking.
But no, The Matrix, right?
Oh, when the guy dodges. Yeah. I was thinking about the.
Come on, give me credit.
When the bullet holes outlined the body, like it's like, oh, he dodged it all, but they were so close to hitting. That's Mason Barnett. He's going to get torched, and then JT Ginn, mid tier.
I was thinking of Happy Gilmore 2 when Marco Hernandez is running around the driving range when they're trying to hit him with all the drives.
You can't hit me,
Marcelo. Not Marco Hernandez. Marco Hernandez.
I was like the Red Sox
2017. No, Marcelo.
JT Ginn.
It's midnight. Give me a break.
Yeah, we're tired. Yeah, if we're screwing stuff up. Wait, where's his game logs? Is he even?
He's pitched.
Yeah,
he was like 3-6 with a 4-something. 3-6 with a 4.69 this year.
His last outing, he pitched 4.1 inning. He's very short inning count. Most of these are 4-6. First Texas, 5-4, 2-5-4. Yeah, a lot
he
of
was
short outings.
This last time, but had 4 walks, and the time before that was 5 innings, 1 run.
So he's do the A's play on Monday? Do we know?
I would say probably. Definitely not.
No, you don't fly West Coast? No way.
But this is the time where you have makeup games. That's the only reason I'm checking. Yeah, no, nothing for them. This is like when, like, if a series gets canceled in June, you fly out in September to make it up on like a random Monday. That's I didn't think they'd have a game, but
do you guys remember 2019 when there was a Red Sox Royals game, I think it was, and it got suspended and the Royals had to fly in to play like an inning?
Yeah, Brock Holt like walked it off immediately.
Yeah. That was so bad. Oh, that my sucks. God, I felt awful. I think they did like $5 tickets and like really cheap hot dogs if you could go to the game, but it was like during the day of like.
Wasn't it a doubleheader though? Didn't they do like a? No, they didn't. Wasn't that?
No,
it?
No, they didn't.
That was it. Yeah, never mind. I feel like there was something after it though. We have to go to the booth later and check. We'll check later. Someone comment, tell us.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about any specific moments of this series? Like game one was just a slog. They didn't hit at all. Giolito pitched well enough to get the win, and they didn't hit. Game two, I know, is where there's a moment that we're going to want to talk about, because I want to go out on a limb here and say that Nate Eaton trying to stretch from first to third on a ball hit to left field was, Sammy, your least favorite moment of the Red Sox season. Do I have that right?
Either that or when Cora had Slayton pitch to Vlad with a base open in Toronto. One of those. I think this one, because this was
more meaningful, okay, too.
I don't crash out a lot. I'm very good at I'm mad for 30 minutes after the game, and then I move on. This had me fuming for like 2 straight hours, because it affected the entire game, and the entire game after it happened in the second inning. So the entire game, everything that happens has an asterisk next to it in my head, because I'm thinking, well, if Nate Eaton didn't get thrown out at third base with nobody out, it would be X, Y, and Z would have happened. So he gets thrown out at third. It would have been first and second with no outs. Connor Wong comes up, hit a double. So it would have been probably second and third with one out. I know maybe they don't pitch him the same way if there's a guy on, but like, stuff like that, avoidable brain dead mistakes, is what makes me absolutely lose my mind, lose my cool, crash out publicly online. That was, it's hard to make me angry like that when it comes to baseball. That was the worst it gets. Nate Eaton, I don't know if he'll ever come off my shit list. He needs to have like some insane game winning or playoff moment or something, because right now I'm not a fan.
I cannot recall a point in the last two seasons where I've seen a crash out from Sammy that was the equivalent of Nate Eaton.
Yeah, like, this was an epic level crash.
Like, so I was driving back from radio, heard the play, and I was like swearing in the car, whatever. Maybe 10 seconds later, I look at my phone and there is 7 texts from Sammy alone. And it's like, there's no fucking way. Are you fucking serious? I Nate Eaton, what the fuck? And like, it was just bing, 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 bing. 2 hours later, if fucking Nate Eaton.
Yeah.
This morning, Sunday as a recording, this morning, I can't stop thinking about fucking Nate Eaton. Like, it was,
dude,
it was a full blown crash out.
And like I said, I don't do this often. Like, if someone comes in and they blow the game out of the bullpen, I'm like, God damn it. You know what?
But that's whatever. Also, like, you can't control that. You know, you're going to have blow ups. Like, this is something that you can control. And I was sitting,
the moment was spots. Huge yeah, moment, too.
Yeah. So the moment was they were down 2-0. And Wong hits, no, it was Sogard hit the single.
And Sogard's on first. Yes. Eaton hits the little blooper. It would have been first and second. So
Eaton's on first.
Sorry.
Sogard hits the bloop.
Yes.
Would have been first and second, no outs. Wong hits a ball that would have scored him on the next play. And they would, had he stayed at second, they would have had second and third, the tying run on third, the go-ahead run on second with no outs. In the end, the next two guys struck out to end the inning. We don't know what would have happened because those were the second and third outs. But like the Eaton play here, it was so up, like my view was perfect. I was in the loge box behind home plate. There was no, he had the TV did not do it justice for how brutal of a read it was for him to go to third. And that is don't, that's not the third base coach. That is Nate Eaton's read. He's looking right at the ball and he made the decision to go to third there out by a mile. Pat.
The other thing too is sure. Like Jason Dominguez is not a stellar outfielder. But I wouldn't even say he has a great arm. It is Fenway left field. So the furthest he can possibly be is 312 feet. That ball was bounced to his knees about 30 feet behind short.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even like he made a backhanded play, good throw, or like bobbled it, or he's going back. It was as planted as you can be as an outfielder to have a ball come to you. And he was able to set, throw. It was not close.
And then Jason Dominguez, a fucking idiot, is literally laughing at Nate Eaton for getting thrown out by him at third base. That's like losing a spelling bee to someone who can't read. It's insane to me. Like, I cannot believe that. And then the face Nate Eaton made after, like, he's like, what happened? Bro, what do you mean what happened? Anyway, I don't want to crash out again. It
changed. Like, I saw some people say, well, the next two guys struck out, so you can't, like, it would have been 2-1. But it would have changed.
Great. Better than 2-0.
You're right. Better than 2-0, but it would have changed the vibe of the entire inning. Like, you just get a run. The fans are going nuts. You got second and third and no outs to tie and take the lead. And, yeah, Bayo, I think, let up a run maybe the next half inning, maybe the half inning after that. But, like, who knows where that inning goes? Like, it could have come tumbling down. And in the end, like you found yourself fighting back, just trying the whole game. Alex Cora managed it as aggressively as humanly possible. He went to Garrett Whitlock for 4 outs in a game they were losing. He went to Chapman in a game they were losing. Like Cora desperately wanted to have that game. And yeah, that moment really changed the entire dynamic of it. So Sammy, I don't blame you or anyone else who crashed out over it. Like it was one of, I mean, I can't even, like, how different would these conversations tonight be if Eaton doesn't go to third, they win game 2, Crochet comes out, dominates game 3, the Red Sox have taken 2 out of 3. Like, how different is this night?
We probably don't start the show talking about, is it a must-win game? Like, it's so fucking frustrating, man. I can't believe he did that. That's, that type of stuff just sends me on an endless spiral of rage. And, you know, he hasn't been bad lately. That's the thing that's annoying is like, I've been saying, I like this Nate Eaton guy. He's good org depth. Ideally, you don't have him playing every day, but you know, right-handed, could play a little infield, a little bit of outfield, decent speed, a bit of pop, hits lefties better than righties. Like, I don't hate having this guy on the roster. And now I can't stand up for this guy. That was the worst mistake you're ever going to see. That was disgusting. Putrid. Yeah,
we need, I know it was against the lefty, but still we need Willie back. We really need
to I am dude, give me Willie in right field against a lefty over that freaking Nate Eaton. Anyway,
I agree. Willie should play every day when he's back. He should, to me.
Can I there's another moment from the second game I want to touch on that I loved, but I didn't really talk about it because the Red Sox lost. But
let's hear it.
Did you guys see when Chapman threw that inside fastball to Jazz that went to the backstop?
Chapman had a couple that went to the backstop. It was weird.
Yeah.
So Chapman threw an inside fastball. It was like 98 miles an hour to Jazz Chisholm, who loves to talk. And so the ball gets by the catcher, rolls all the way to the backstop. And so Jazz immediately jumps out of the way and then stares down Aroldis Chapman. But Chapman starts walking towards him because he's going to get the baseball from the catcher. And right as Chapman starts walking closer to Jazz, Jazz just puts his head down and stops looking at him. It was the ultimate. He got completely bitched. And nobody, I don't think I saw anyone talk about it. It was awesome. If you go back and watch that, he completely like looked at Chapman like tough guy, like, you kidding me? You almost hit me. And then slowly Chapman gets closer and closer. And Chisholm's like, oh, shit. Okay. This guy's actually scary. Maybe I'm not that tough. So I just thought that was great. I like Jazz. I hate, I know people hate him. I think he's good for baseball, but he got completely, he got bitched in that moment.
I love that. Yeah, that's something in sitting in the loge box behind the plate, you don't see that. So I never saw it. That's awesome. No one wants to fight Aroldis. How weird is it that Aroldis, he didn't let up a hit tonight, right?
Nope.
Yeah, 1-2-3. It was a well-hit ball to Romy that Romy made a play on.
What do you guys think of the Ally Sanchez?
That's what I was going to say. He's only letting up hits and runs with Ally Sanchez behind the plate. Is that correlation?
His velo's down with Ally Sanchez too. He's throwing 95.
That can't be an Ally Sanchez thing. Like Ally Sanchez can call the game. Ally Sanchez can't control how hard.
Shout out Statman Brian Barrett. Brian Barrett tweeted out the velos from when Ally Sanchez is behind the plate. It is a full 5 miles an hour slower.
Okay, here's where I stand on this. It's probably nothing. It's probably a coincidence. But I don't want to see him catch Chapman anymore. Yeah, just in case it's not.
I think it was Narvaez. I think he might have said it on foul territory. I think it was on foul territory where he talks about how one of the beauties of what Chapman's been able to do is he can turn it up to like the 100, 101, 102, like he did tonight when he wants to, but he's been able to preserve himself by keeping it down in spots where maybe he doesn't, I don't want to say think it's worth it, but maybe think it's worth it. And these two spots were down a run and tied with the A's who, I don't know, that one I feel like maybe a little bit less so. But when you're down a run, it's not quite the same situation as like you're up a run, you're up two runs, you're in a tie game in a big spot. Like down a run, I mean, we saw it with Kimbrel all the time, and maybe Kimbrel wasn't necessarily on purpose the way maybe they're trying to make it seem like Chapman is. But remember Kimbrel, like anytime you brought him in a non-save situation, he sucked.
Yeah. It's weird. Baseball closing, especially, it's so, I mean, the highest level of closing I did was in high school, but it is very mental. It's always like, I don't know, your mind is racing. So I think there has to be some correlation between like the scenario and how much same with Crochet, who's not even a closer. You see, he pitches. He was up. His two seam was up 2 miles an hour today, and his fastball was like 1.5 mile an hour up from his last two starts. Like,
and he does it against the Yankees every time too.
Right. So it's not a perfect example, but I do think, especially with closers, you could say pitchers in general, like the adrenaline plays a huge factor.
Well, just to echo that point, the numbers for Chapman right here on his fastballs, Goldschmidt foul ball 98. Ball one, 98. And then he got him to ground out. To Chisholm, 99 strike swinging. Sinker, 99. Sinker, 100 on a ground out. And then Caballero, 101 four seam, 101 sinker, 101 sinker.
Oh, so, the scoreboard at Fenway flashed a 102 to us. They did.
Yeah, it did.
I did
see it on the ESPN broadcast too, but either way, like
they adjusted it.
It was in the triple digits, so I think you guys are completely valid. Like Chapman was up for this game. I don't know if he was.
You want to know why, Joe?
Up.
You know why, Joe?
Why?
Because it was a must-win game. It was. And so was the last one. But they didn't win it.
They didn't win. Must win, and you don't win. Therefore, it's all over. Gordo declares the Red Sox dead.
That's not my definition of must win.
All right.
I want Roman Anthony back. He's probably not. I want him back.
Maybe we should change it to like should win.
That's every day.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's. I know we got to get to enough said in a sec, but we should talk about just how unreal Crochet was tonight. I know we kind of started right there, but I mean, 12 strikeouts in this spot and in this game against the Yankees, he let up 3 earned. It was on a couple of homers, one of them to Aaron Judge. And was it
Jose Caballero?
Caballero hit it. Who hit it off?
It was Rosario. Rosario hit it off.
Rosario
has,
yep.
He has insane stats against Chapman. I'll find the
Crochet.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Crochet. God, it is so late, dude. I'm fading fast. Thanks for hanging in with us, listeners. Versus Crochet. Yeah, he has really good numbers. They're talking about it on the radio.
Yeah, Pat brought that one. He's like, yeah, Rosario crushes Crochet.
I think he's literally hitting like 600 off Crochet. It's a big number.
They talked about it last series real quick. What did he have? He had 3 hits against Crochet or 2 hits?
He was like 3 for 4.
He was 5 for 6 coming into today against Crochet.
That's not bad. So, that's not bad.
Dude, that's like, you guys might not remember this guy because I'm older than you. You guys remember Enrique Wilson?
The name rings a bell, but he may not be in my baseball memory time.
Enrique Wilson was like Ahmed Rosario, like kind of a shit bum on the Yankees, but he owned Pedro. So every time the Yankees played the Red Sox and Pedro was pitching, Enrique Wilson would be hitting like 6th or 7th behind all their big boppers. It would be like, God, this fucking guy again. He would just doink him. I don't know how, but he hit Pedro very well. You can't really say about anyone, really.
Hopefully Rosario is not Enrique Wilson. But yeah, with Chapman, I mean, we look up at the end of 3 innings and it's 3 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 7 Ks. And it's like, okay, like this guy knew what he had to do today. He came to play. Velo was obviously up, as you said, Sammy. Not a coincidence. The adrenaline's pumping. Also probably by design. Like these pitchers have to make sure they last not just through a game, but through a season. Like you don't see starting pitchers pumping their hardest every single time. But Crochet tonight, he held his velocity from the first pitch to the last. Like he was high 90s the whole way. Really, really, really hard to hit. And you know, it feels wrong that he let in 3 earned runs with how dominant he really was tonight. But 12 Ks really, to me, tells a better version of the story of how he looked.
Yep. Yeah. Call him Cialis. He was hard tonight.
Ew.
Funny, just really funny story, quick, about tonight when Crochet was just... When Crochet was striking out the world, Gordo looks at me and goes, How many Ks do you think they have up there? They must have 27, right? Why wouldn't you? And me, because my favorite thing to do is fuck with Gordo, go, how many backwards ones do you think they have up there? He goes, oh, that's a good point. They probably have 27 of those too. I go, Gordo, you just make them backwards.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fuck you.
He's turning around.
You just
flip it, dude. It's not that. Yeah.
Oh, but man. Like the right, face he made, he was like, where would you even keep 54 Ks? Like,
what if the guy is a 54 strikeout game?
There you go. We didn't even think about it. Pat, maybe they need more than 27 in case they go to extras and start.
Do you think they actually have? When they do the Ks, this is something I've never thought about. Do they only do it for the starter, or do they do it for the whole game?
They only do it for Crochet. It's the ace of the given staff, and that's it.
The Diamondbacks the Diamondbacks had the K counter, and it was just in general. However many Red Sox the Diamondbacks struck out in right field, it would light up. They had them all, but they would light them up per strikeout. I never really thought about that. Seems like something I should know.
Shall we go to Enough Said before we get out of here?
Yeah, I got one. I got an old man take, another one for you.
Here we go.
So I really like the Green Monster jerseys on Friday night for the Red Sox. But other than that, if they're playing the Yankees, I need classic jerseys from the Red Sox. I don't want to see the fucking yellow jerseys when they're playing the Yankees. It robs everyone of the most aesthetically pleasing jersey matchup in all of baseball. Red Sox. I wouldn't even mind if they didn't wear the green ones against them, but those are so good that I'm cool with it. But I just Sunday night on ESPN, seeing the crispy white Red Sox jersey versus the shitty gray Yankees jersey is just so, it's so beautiful. And I'm a big aesthetics guy when it comes to baseball, which brings me to the second part of my Nuff Said. I like when games are on Nesson, but goddamn did that Apple TV game look good. Those cameras are insane. Whatever they're using, they're crazy, it looks like you are like perched on the center field fence with binoculars. It is really, really crispy. I wish the radio thing lined up better with the game, because I listened to it for a little bit because I way prefer listening to WEEI than whoever the Apple TV broadcast is. Nothing against whoever was doing it. It's just I prefer the hometown announcers. But there was like a touch off and it was bugging me. So I listened to it for half the game and then I switched back. I digress. The camera was amazing. I think the Apple TV games look fucking amazing. And honestly, the ESPN one, kind of in the same boat. Just looks so good on TV. If I could take the Nesson or WEEI broadcast and overlay it over either those properly without a little delay, that'd be heaven. So do that. And then no more City Connects against the Yankees unless it's Friday night at Fenway and you're wearing the greens. That goes. Thank you.
It is too bad that, because I agree, the Apple TV cameras always look super clean. But it's just too bad that like 90% of the fan base can't watch and see it.
Yeah, dude. I don't know how. I wonder what the viewership numbers are on those Apple TV games.
Compared to like Sunday Night Baseball, right? Like it can't be like, close.
No, it can't be. Well, I mean, ESPN, it's like a scavenger hunt too. Like finding that for a lot of people. I bought the deal thing, so because I can't stand trying to find all this shit. But I don't know. I just feel like streaming is rough, man. I don't like it. In my day, you used to turn on the TV and flip to channel 51 and it was necessary.
Go to the guide and you could just find the program you're looking for and click the button.
Find your program.
Yeah.
11 o'clock news.
Pat, you got enough said?
I do. I won't spoil who the interview is dropping this week. But, long story short, I was coming right from work. I park. I walk over. I'm making my way into Fenway. I grab my credential. I get a text from Gordo. It says, hurry up. X player just said, like, 1 second.
I think we can spoil the player. We're deep enough in the episode.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. So Gordo texts me, his story just told us 1 second, run. So I was like, oh, like I'm fine. Like I have my credential. I just have to go through the gate. I'm already in line. I shit you fucking not. There are 6 Yankee fans in front of me, probably all sub 23. Every single one of these fucking idiots walk through the metal detector with their backpack on. And then Fenway security, and I don't blame them at all, to make a point to them, searched every crevice of each of the 6 backpacks. And it took me I am not exaggerating, probably a full 7 minutes to get into Fenway. And by the time I got down there, Gordo, Sammy, and Trevor are going through the intro. And I'm like, I'm going to fuck the Yankees. Fuck the Yankees.
I felt so bad about this.
Dude, that would have ruined my entire day. I felt really bad.
I'm so cool about this. Like, I don't really give a fuck. It was the fact that it was because of 6 idiot Yankee fans. That was the tipping point for me.
So from
you got to just like finagle your way by being like, excuse me, sorry, I'm in a big rush. I got to go. You mind if I just scan this really quick and then just go buy him? and just be like, oh, you're gabagool.
From
whatever they say.
From mine and Sammy's side of this, what happened was Story was coming out of the dugout to go, what we thought to was to go take BP. So we walked up to him. We're like, hey, any chance, like, you got, you know, 5 to 10 minutes after you're done. And usually, like, when guys do interviews, it's after BP is done. So you'll ask them, they'll say yes or no. And if they say yes, like, you'll talk to them probably in 15 to 20 minutes. That's what we thought was going to happen. He says 1 second. When he said 1 sec, like, it pretty much was 25, 30 seconds. And we were in there with the mics. And I felt like shit. Cause you could see Pat walking up, like, right as we're going. And it's like, we can't, we couldn't tell Story to wait. But, like, at the same time, it's
hold
like,
up.
Yeah. Like, just give us five.
Trev, just wait a second, dude. Just wait. Yeah.
But I felt bad because I, yeah. That stunk.
It's just all because of those fucking Yankee fans, and I'll leave it at that.
Always their fault. All right, my enough said before we get out of here. Did my pizza save the season?
Nope.
No.
They lost that night, so no.
No, they lost before I ate the pizza. They lost, I ate the pizza. They're 1-0 since I ate the pizza.
No, you gotta carry it. You gotta eat it the day of for it to count. It's too much of a reach for me.
No, sorry. They already lost. I ate 3 big squares of pizza, and they won. Yeah, it's rectangular this time. Usually, it's not rectangular.
You sent us the picture. You sent us the picture. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
No, the pizza did not save the season. I'm not putting the pizza in any good light right now. This is, by the way, the frozen shrimp pizza that Gordo tortures. I feel bad for your wife having to inhale that scent around the house. Just, oh. Did you see the thing? Do you see the thing where the politician in Kentucky was like going on a rant about shrimp coming from other countries and turning people into like aliens from Alien versus Predator? He's like, you're gonna look like this if you eat that foreign shrimp.
I didn't see that, but I'm unbothered by it.
I'm going to find it and send it to you, and you're going to be like, I believe this radical politician that says I'm going to turn into an alien if I eat shrimp. So there you go.
Crust, cheese, popcorn shrimp, Red Sox 1-0 since I ate it. Just saying.
It's probably all frozen, right? So it's like all like damp when after you cook it. Like it's like...
Do you fry it or bake it?
Bake.
Ooh,
it is way too big wet. To air fry. Way too big. It would not fit in an air fryer.
Stuff is flopping.
Wait. Do you? This is actually imperative that I know this. Do you cook the shrimp while it's on the pizza?
The shrimp goes. It's frozen, fried,
pre-cooked.
Shrimp.
It's pre-cooked.
No,
yeah.
No. Not what I'm asking.
It goes on frozen and then goes in the oven.
You're a disgusting pig.
Yeah. Goro, I honestly, if you put the shrimp in the air fryer and then put it on top of the pizza for like if
no,
you
then
if
it
you
would thaw, burn.
No, it wouldn't
go,
burn.
Go play in the mud, you filthy little pig.
Listen, you're putting me in the same light as Garrett Crochet, who struck out 12 Yankees today. I'm going to take it as a compliment, and I have leftover shrimp pizza that I'll
Garrett
probably...
Garrett Crochet would roll your pizza 98 miles an hour with elite extension right at your face.
1-0. That's all I'm telling you. And I got leftovers, so I got another win in me.
Oh, I smell it from here.
My place smelled the rest of the night. It was great. I loved it.
Poor wife, dude. That's mean.
No, she was in Philadelphia. I spared her, but she's back now. But the stench is gone now.
She comes back. She's like, "What the fuck happened in here? It stinks."
All right, that's probably a good spot to wrap it up. Thanks for tuning in to episode 265.
Gordo, like, she walks into the house and you get that horn sound from SpongeBob. The
Joe,
do I get a wrap it here for you guys? Because right, you guys are losing it.
I can do it. I can do it. Ready? Thanks for tuning in to episode 265 of Play Tessie. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. We're on WEI's YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up on all our videos. They're in the Play Tessie playlist. Subscribe to WEI. Find us on the socials. Oh, 264. It's episode 264.
I rest my case.
264. Subscribe on YouTube and on the podcasts. And then we're on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. All right, please, 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 please take 2 out of 3 from the A's. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.